So here's another installment of ancient tales and stories from when I was a kid or when I was younger, but pretty much from when I was a kid. And the next installment, it's funny, all these stories I have listed down, they're not all as impactful as each other. They're not all created equally. Some stories are really just remembrances of things that were weird about growing up. Glowing up, boy. Glowing up in my family, growing up, glowing or growing in my family as a kid. Some are a bit more elaborate, because there's more to the story, I suppose. This next story comes from the period of my childhood after we moved from Highway 20 up to Sky Ridge. And so, Sky Ridge was a kind of housing development, housing area, not a poor neighborhood, definitely not a poor neighborhood. I wouldn't say super rich, but definitely not poor. And it was where we moved, I think it was 1979 or 1980. But essentially we moved to Sky Ridge, and when we were there, once we were there, we all sort of made friends, new friends. I went to Catholic school in grade school, so my school situation didn't really change. But, some friendships changed because now I was taking a different bus home. So, back in the day, in my early time at Immaculate Conception School, that let's call it the first 5 years, the first 5 years there, from kindergarten through fourth grade, I more or less took the bus that took the kids out to the valley. Highway 20, out to, some people who lived out near LeConnor, some folks who lived out in Bayview. That's great. But then when we moved to Sky Ridge, which was closer to the city of Mount Vernon, I took a different bus, ended up making different friends. That happens, right? Well, one of the people I befriended or who befriended me was actually a neighbor, and I don't want to say too much about him. I'll give you his first name. His first name was Scott, and he was a pretty cool dude. During those years, 1980 to 82, 83, he was a year ahead of me, so he went to high school first. But during those years, we did a lot of fun things. We went, I may have mentioned this, we would go on hunts for Bigfoot with our BB guns. Sky Ridge was basically nestled under Little Mountain. And Little Mountain, if you're ever driving into Mount Vernon, Washington, and you're heading north on I-5, that's the direction of north, and you look to your right as you enter Mount Vernon, you'll see a little hill slash mountain. I think it's still there. They haven't torn it down yet. There may even still be an observation deck at the top of Little Mountain. I know there was one when I was a kid. That may have been torn down so they could put up a parking lot. I don't know. But anyways, if you look to your right, you'll see a little hill that would be a mountain if you were in almost every other state in the country, but for Washington State, it's hard to call it a mountain. But that would be Little Mountain, and Sky Ridge was basically on the western face of Little Mountain. We lived on a street called Sound View, and I suppose if you were sitting on a deck and you were drunk enough, you could kind of see the Puget Sound. Air quality was different back then. This next story comes from that time, the time that we lived on Little Mountain in Sky Ridge neighborhood off of Soundview Road. And I don't know, I was going to title this story M80, because hey, if you were a kid and you grew up back in the day, you might know what an M80 is, a small chunk of dynamite, real firecrackers, real fireworks, man. Of course, I was a kid when the whole safe and sane thing started taking off, and you actually had to go to the Indian reservation to get any of the good stuff, as we'd called it. So if you wanted to get bottle rockets and firecrackers, and they really didn't have cherry bombs, but the things they would call cherry bombs, even M-80s, which were technically illegal, but you could go up to the little shack on the Indian Res around July the 2nd or July the 3rd and say, can you show me the good stuff? And if you were lucky and you came across an old coastal Salish elder of some tribe like the Swinomish tribe, and that elder understood the ancient ways of fireworks manufactured in China, the black cat mythology, right? Then that particular Native American or son or daughter of a Native American would pull out a paper bag and say, how many would you like? And you'd say, I'll take two or three. And yeah, they might cost you $1 a piece or $2 a piece. And I'm telling you, those are $1982, okay? We're not talking 20 fucking 19, $2 barely buys you a candy bar that's going to give you cancer bullshit. We're saying that for $2 or $1 in 1982, you could get yourself a nice little chunk of dynamite that would, you know, take out somebody's mailbox, for example. Not really saying I did it. Not really saying I didn't. So the title of this next one could be M80, but not in any cool way. Anyways, I had this friend, he was a neighbor. He lived nearby, and we would go on adventures. And above his house, so you know, we were on the western facing side of Little Mountain, and we were essentially living on a slope. So the housing development we were in was kind of terraced. If you know what terracing is, there were different levels. And he was the next level up. And then above him, right at where the forest starts. So if you want to know, when we went on our little mountain adventures involving Bigfoot, it didn't take very long to get out into the woods. It was kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, I think it's very different today. But back then, you could get into the woods as a kid, and you got out there pretty quick. I mean, you know, you walked a quarter of a mile, and you were on the track of Bigfoot. Or, you know, some pig or bear cub that you pretended was Bigfoot. Probably dangerous, too, because, you know, bears don't mess around, neither do cougars. But that's not something we were worried about in particular. Anyways, my friend Scott, who lived above me, had two people he called friends. I don't know if they were friends. It's hard for me to call them friends in retrospect. But he had a couple friends, too. And I don't want to... If I do remember their names, I think I block them from memory. So let's just call his two young male friends. I think they were a few years older than us. You know, so if we were 10 or 11... they were 13 or 14. Let's call them Frickin' Frack. Because Frickin' Frack doesn't sound so bad. I mean, if I told you that, you know, Frickin' Frack lived nearby, you'd say, okay, that doesn't sound too scary. Well, so one day I was hanging out with Scott, and we were basically hanging out at his place, which was a level up, you know, essentially that next road up. And we were messing around. I think we were probably just, you know, goofing off with firecrackers and the kind of crazy shit we would do. And Scott's neighbors from up above, Frickin' Frack, decide to pay us a visit. So we're there standing in the road, and Frickin' Frack come by. And I don't recall if it was Frick or Frack. It doesn't really matter. But either Frick or Frack said, Dan, you know, Dan, would you like to see an M80? Now, listen, when I was 11 or 12 years old and you said, would you like to see an explosion? I mean, listen, I liked it. I liked action. I wanted to see action. And I had the same reckless DNA that my dad had. So, yeah, fuck, show me an M80. I may not have said it that way, but believe me, I learned to use the F-bomb quite early and the middle finger. Whole bunch of other stories around that. So we're standing up there, and Frick, I think it was Frick, said, Dan, look out over there. Look at that. And Frick was kind of in front of me, pointing off in the distance, said, look at that. You know, you're going to see an M80. And Frack had in his hand behind him, I didn't really notice it. Come on. I grew up in Mount Vernon, Washington, okay? Not Chicago, not New York City. I mean, there were a limited number of things you had to worry about. Well, Frack, who was standing behind me, had in his hand, much to my chagrin, a lead pipe. And Frack hit me over the head. He actually swung as hard as he could, probably, and he nearly knocked me out, which kind of reminds me of a previous story about my sister hitting me in the head with a Louisville Slugger. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she was toughening me up because I didn't get knocked out. Now, I gotta tell you, I really don't know with any certainty, but I gotta tell you, that whole thing was kind of scary. I was shook up. If you've ever been hit in the head really hard, you know what it's like to be a little punch drunk. You feel like you're vibrating. I was feeling the vibration. And my friend Scott grabbed me and took me down to his house. And we went inside and we left frickin' Frack by themselves. At the time, I didn't know what to think of it. I found out things later on about frickin' Frack that kind of worried me. It's entirely possible that I was going to be the first of their human victims. I mean, the thing about Scott was a decent enough guy, but he was a kid too. And if a couple kids, knock out your friend and say, "Hey, will you help us? You don't want to get in trouble, do you? Do you, Scott? You don't want to get in trouble. Will you just help us take Dan up there? He's a little bit chunky. Help us carry him up to our house, and we'll take care of the rest." That's the thing about, people saying, "Would you like to see an M80?" I would like to say that I learned my lesson that day and that, like a trout that's smarter the second time around after biting into the really fancy, really flashy lure, fishing lure. I'd like to say that I was a trout that survived and I never made that mistake again, but in some ways, that's a story of life, of all things, of all living things, but maybe all things that are excited by the flashy and the crazy and sometimes the dangerous. I know there are people who would say, "Well, human beings, we can be vegans and we can eat vegetables and we can eat our mushrooms and our whey and we don't have to worry about any of the dark stuff." But I'm constantly reminded when I see those peepers in my skull that there's something a little different between us and, let's say, a deer. We are very predatorial creatures. And the thing about being a predator is the very thing that makes you dangerous also, in my opinion, makes it easy to take advantage of you, probably even to destroy you. I mean, the predator's very capabilities are the very things that can destroy the predator. Predators are excited by the flashy, sparkly thing. I mean, look at your cat. If you ever played with your cat, you understand what gets your cat excited, but then you also know what it's one of its weaknesses is. And so if you're hanging out with a bunch of predator cubs and one of the cubs says, "Hey cub, you want to see an M80 go off?" And the cub, "Well, fuck yeah. What predator cub wouldn't want to see an M80 go off?" But then what if they are predators looking at you as prey? That's the thing. This is a very weird memory because based upon things I heard about frickin' Frack later in life, it did occur to me that they could have been either serial killers in the making or already have been made. I mean, I don't like thinking about this topic because it is really dark, but think about all the people that go missing. And that's the thing. A lot of people go missing. A lot of people simply disappear. And then consider all the people that go missing that nobody cares about. That's not a short list. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but every day I walk around Little Saigon, I see people every fucking day that pretty much nobody gives a shit about. So if some of these people just disappeared, like all of a sudden, blammo, they're not there any longer. No one's going to give a fuck. If you think the woman that does the admin work at the food bank cares, no, she doesn't. She has too many Chinese people to keep track of, let alone one or two, African American or Caucasian homeless people. She doesn't give a fuck. The cops don't give a fuck. So I'm telling you that it's possible today, and I think it was probably possible in 1980s Mount Vernon, Washington, to find people that nobody gave a shit about. And though it was probably more difficult back then, maybe it was because it's such a small town, even then I think frickin' frack could have killed a couple people before they ever got to me. And so yeah, when I think about that incident with the lead pipe, here's the deal. I can't think of a reason. If I was a 14-year-old kid, I would have never have done this, but I can't think of many good reasons for hitting another human over the head with a lead pipe. The only thing I can think of is to knock them out and then probably do greater harm. And I can't think of any kids when I grew up that would think, oh, the outcome for me will be great if I get caught. Okay? For me as a kid, if I got caught, I mean, I would never do that kind of heinous bullshit, but if I got caught even thinking about doing it, I mean, I would have been in deep shit. And so, yeah, it's hard for me to fathom how this had a happy outcome. It wasn't a surprise party. Let me put it this way. Frick and Frack were not intending to knock me out with a lead pipe to take me to some happy surprise party up there at the edge of the woods. That's the thing about Frick and Frack. They lived on the edge of the woods. Beyond their house, you were in the woods. Now, were you in the darkest woods, the worst part of the North Cascades? No. You were about 10 miles from there. But were you in the woods, so to speak, so that if you scream, nobody could hear you? Yeah. Go in about 500 feet. And you could have been screaming, and I could have been a kid screaming my lungs off. And no one would have heard me. No one would have given a shit. It's not to say people didn't care. It's just that back in the day, if you heard a noise coming from the woods, I mean, I'm sorry, you probably would rationalize it and say, that's a bear, or that's Bigfoot, or that's a hawk. And if the screaming didn't last very long, yeah, it was a hawk, or it was a bear, or it was a cougar. It was some type of bear cub. It was a pig. It was a wild pig. It wasn't some kid being snuffed out. So I don't know. Maybe my sister Nancy, when she hit me over the head a year or two previously, did me a favor. Maybe she toughened me up. I really don't know. If I had been conked out that day, I think Frickin' Frack would have bullied Scott. I think they would have taken my body up to the garage, and then it would have been a question of whether Frickin' Frack had the will to go through with it and whether Scott would keep the secret. I think they probably would have tried to kill Scott too. And here's the thing. Back then, kids were unmonitored enough, and back then, the world was different enough that nobody would have immediately thought, well, Frickin' Frack killed Dan and Scott. No, I think it would have been like, holy crap, Frickin' Frack said a bear came along, or some dudes in a van, drifters in a van. I mean, there was a lot of stranger danger madness back then, justified or not justified, a lot of craziness. Frickin' Frack could have made up any fucking story they wanted to. Scott and Dan were playing outside and got in a van, or you know what? We saw them go up the hill to hunt Bigfoot and they never came back. Yeah. So this isn't a really great story, but this is a true story. I don't know if Scott would remember it, and he was a year older than me. And back then, here's the thing about being young, a year can be all the difference in the world. I mean, I believe in God, so clearly God was looking out for me that day, but my friend Scott was looking out for me. He was definitely looking out for me. I think he immediately knew what was going on. He took me down to his house, he locked the door, and Frickin' Frack were standing up there with their fucking lead pipe in their hand. They realized that their attempt to be, super killers, a la we read Nietzsche and some stupid shit like that. Their chance to, yeah. What was that famous case? I'm gonna try to look it up because there's a famous case in Leopold and Loeb. Leopold and Loeb. I'm gonna look that up real quick. Leopold and Loeb. Yeah, there we go. Leopold and Loeb, students at the University of Chicago, 1924. They kidnapped and murdered 14-year-old Bobby Franks. And that's the thing, you know, I look at these guys and I think about frickin' frack, and I gotta tell you, they seem a lot like these Leopold and Loeb characters, but they were younger, and I don't think they read Nietzsche. I do think that their parents were rich, but you know, that's a relative concept too when you think about it. What does it mean to be wealthy or rich? Anywho, that's the story of the M80, which was really a lead pipe that hit me across the back of the head. And so, yeah, two head injuries. A head injury, I think, in 1978, and another from 1981, I think. And yeah, you know, got to be careful, but I don't know what to tell you. Those kids, man, those kids and their fireworks.